Fancy a game?
Tyler Bischoff is...
And are they both trying not to laugh at the word duty?
Yeah.
Technically correct.
Why is she speaking like...
Because they learned English from Professor Magoo over there.
Relax, we'll be in and out. Anyway, you've never seen my lab.
Oh, great. I get to see your nerd lab.
Hello, the greatest coaching search on earth is back. So is Jared Justice.
Hello.
All right. Can I shut your mic off for the rest of the show?
Yeah.
Thank you. Ryan Wallace will join us a little bit later to talk about the Golden Knights. Malcolm Subban, 2 wins in 2 days as the goalie. Get to some Raiders. Vontaze Burfict is coming. Vontaze Burfict is going to be a Raider, maybe. But the UNLV coaching search is the content well that never dries up. It is incredible. Thad Matta, talked a lot about him yesterday. We've been had. If only someone had. If only, yeah, that's a good one. If only someone had realized that Thad Matta had a motive for getting his name rumored with jobs. But Mark Anderson of the Review Journal tweeted this out last night. According to a source close to the situation, there have been no discussions between Thad Matta and UNLV, and the source doesn't expect Matta to be the next UNLV coach. Supposedly it was a done deal. So I made this point earlier this year. Pay attention to who's reporting stuff. Like this isn't that hard. Like, if somebody continually gets stuff wrong, or if they don't have, like, an actual... Like, there's no punishment if they get it wrong. Like, we talked about Las Vegas locally earlier in the year with the Rick Pitino stuff. That's an anonymous Twitter account. Like, if they get something wrong, it's no big deal. It's a good Twitter account to follow. But, like, if they get wrong that Rick Pitino is going to be the next coach, how do they get punished? They don't. If Mark Anderson of the Review Journal tweets out something and it's wrong, he's going to get in trouble. He'll get fired. He'll get called in to his boss and say, what the hell happened here? Like... There's actual punishment to that. So, like, a lot of the people tweeting, Thad Matta's a done deal. Yeah, they don't have any actual punishment when it happens. That being said, UNLV coaching searches are terrific. They're wonderful. Although this one just seems to be you guys believing people that you have no reason to believe anything they say and running with it. But regardless, these coaching searches are terrific. It does look like the problem, the fear, this is going to be an actual coaching search. They're not going to have a coach by the end of this week. I mean, they might, but it kind of feels like this is going into next week, because it does feel like Desiree Francois is actually, like, interviewing people, and she's going to want to talk to people that are still coaching at the moment. So in the next week is when this coaching search is gonna keep going, it looks like. So that's a bit of a disappointment, just because if you're a UNLV fan, you are horrified of a coaching search after the last one. And it's probably fair. That being said, all that matters is Desiree Francois makes a good hire. Doesn't matter if she makes it now, makes it next week, makes it in 2 weeks. All she needs to do is make a good hire, and things will be okay. Doesn't matter when it actually happens. So, let's talk about Mike Miller. Jeff Borzello of ESPN.com predicted Mike Miller will be the hire. Again, that's a prediction, not like a sourced. Mike Miller's going to be the next head coach. That was just his guess. He listed out a bunch of candidates and then guessed that Mike Miller would be the UNLV head coach. Mike Miller is fascinating. The idea of Mike Miller, and especially if his brother Ryan Miller comes back to UNLV, oh, it would be so great. Ryan Miller, if you're a UNLV fan, you probably know Ryan Miller was already here under Dave Rice. Great recruiting classes in the Dave Rice era. Ryan Miller had a lot to do with those when that staff was fired. Ryan Miller went to TCU. He took one of UNLV's best recruits in Jalen Fisher with him to TCU. He has a solid recruiting pedigree as an assistant. His brother, though, is Mike Miller, who played in the NBA, but has just one season of coaching experience. It was an assistant at Memphis this year. They're actually playing in the NIT tonight for Penny Hardaway. If you see, you're raising your hand like you want to talk, this better be good.
No, go ahead.
What was it?
Nothing. I was trying to remember if this was the same Mike Miller that LeBron was mad at the Miami Heat for letting him go. So, no, it wasn't good. Keep going with your point. I'm already back!
Mike Miller has the one season of coaching experience. So there's not a lot to go on as far as what he is as a coach, and it's an assistant. But the Miller brothers, or even just Mike Miller, if Ryan Miller doesn't want to come back or doesn't want to come back consistent, whatever it would be. The Miller brothers, the ceiling on those two, I think, is incredibly high. Because you look at what they could do from a recruiting standpoint, and it's kind of ridiculous. Like, if you just look at Memphis in year one, and like Penny Hardaway's there, and Penny Hardaway gets a lot, probably most of the credit for that recruiting being good. But we'll get into some of why Mike Miller does deserve some of that credit too. But just Memphis, in year one, they had very limited time to recruit this past class, and they still got the 30th best class in the country. Right now, for 2019, Memphis has the 8th best class in the country. They have the number one player in the country in James Wiseman. And again, Penny Hardaway deserves most of that credit, but James Wiseman played for an AAU team this summer that Mike Miller used to run. Mike Miller no longer runs it, but his cousin does. So Mike Miller has a direct connection to a powerhouse AAU team or program. Gary Parrish wrote a story for CBS Sports over the summer about how Penny Hardaway and Mike Miller were this great recruiting duo, or could be this great recruiting duo. And it's not really, you don't really have any sort of measurement on like how much recruiting Mike Miller has done in year one as an assistant, but it seems like a lot. It seems like he's done a bunch of stuff in the recruiting trail. Mike Miller would also have a great relationship with Finley Prep. If Mike Miller is the head coach at UNLV, he'd have a great relationship with Finley Prep. There'd probably be a lot better players going back to Finley Prep. We've already seen a couple of top 10 recruits. They tweet out the little eyeball emojis, so I don't know how much you want to read into that, but they seem at least interested in the idea of Mike Miller becoming the head coach at UNLV. So I think the ceiling with the Millers is very, very high, because conceivably you're looking at a top 10 class every year, at least top 20. That first class might not be star-studded, but after that, like, UNLV is going to have the talent. And it makes you think, if you're an UNLV fan, it makes you think of Dave Rice. And it probably makes you recoil, because Dave Rice was high-level recruiting with questionable coaching. And they had great recruiting classes, they had a ton of talent, and they couldn't win. They couldn't do well in the Mountain West. And that's the negative to Mike Miller, is that you don't have any coaching experience. So we don't know. He could be a terrible coach. Like, he could bring in the best class in the country and then just be a horrific coach, and they're 8-10 in the Mountain West. Could be an awesome coach too. Like, could be the best coach in college basketball, but somewhere in between, more than likely, is what the problem is.
Really?
Yeah, somewhere in between. It's just, is it closer to greatest coach in the country or closer to worst coach in the country? But with the Millers, there's two things, aside from just the high ceiling in general, there's two things that I think you have to like about it. One is the idea of a quick turnaround is real. Like, they could conceivably get a good class this year, and depending on who they get to stay, like, next year's UNLV team could conceivably be a top three team in the Mountain West. Might not be NCAA tournament level, but they could be a top three team in the Mountain West, and all of a sudden it's like, okay. And then next year they bring in a good, great recruiting class, and it's like, all right, this team should be going to the NCAA tournament. Like, that is a legitimate timeline if you hire Mike and Ryan Miller together. The other part of it is the long-term view. You're probably going to have the best talent in the Mountain West every single year. And again, it comes back to the coaching, but you're probably going to have the best talent every single year in the Mountain West. And again, that's what happened under Dave Rice. The last few years of the Dave Rice era, they were going 8-10 in the Mountain West. That's not very good for what was probably the most talented teams in the Mountain West those years, but that's where they were. So if you're a UNLV fan, there's reason to be scared. There's reason to be scarred from this guy's going to bring in great recruits, but we've never seen him coach. Like, there's reason to be scared of that, but there's also a lot of excitement behind it. Like, the ceiling is very high. The floor is also very low, but the excitement level is there. Because here's the thing. Like, I do a radio show where I mainly talk about UNLV basketball, so there's two different ways that I usually view things. One is, do I think this is legitimately a good idea or a good thing? And two is, do I think this makes my show entertaining? And Mike Miller would make my show entertaining. Like, immediately. Because, like, Mike Miller, he's not Rick Pitino. Where, like, because if Rick Pitino was the head coach here, this would be so easy. Because every time Rick Pitino said something, it would be national news. Like, it'd be the easiest thing I'd ever have to do, is talk about a Rick Pitino coach UNLV team. Mike Miller's not on that level, but he's probably, of all the coaching candidates, probably the next best as far as just pure interest. Because Mike Miller's a big name in the basketball world, and him being a first-time head coach, probably bringing in high-level recruiting classes, everybody's going to be interested. And you just have to say, oh, Mike Miller is interested. He's got some five-star kid interested in him. And, like, my job is so much easier. So, like, that part of it, dear God, sign me up for Mike Miller. The actual, will this be good or not? I don't know. I mean, I think it would be because I tend to still believe in, like, talent wins, even though we just had the Dave Rice experience. I still tend to believe talent wins. And if they could land, if they have the top class in the Mountain West every year, at some point that's going to work. Like, at some point that's going to turn into Mountain West championships. But
what's our offense? We have better players. They'll figure it out.
Right. At some point that's going to work. But there is a fear there. So would it work? I don't know. I would have Mike Miller relatively high on my list. Like, he's ahead of Frank Martin. But,
I mean, I would love Mike Miller mostly to ask about LeBron Miami questions that he's probably answered.
Who cares about LeBron in Miami?
I do.
Nobody else does. The other part of this is the, would UNLV actually hire Mike Miller? Because you have to look at Desiree Francois, and this is her first big hire. This is like the first thing, I'm going to punch you if you say softball. This is her first important hire.
Well, I mean,
don't do it.
Bali.
This is her first hire. This is her first chance as an AD to sort of make an impression and say, this is what I want my athletic department to look like. This is the mark I'm making on the premier program of my athletic department. And Mike Miller might have the lowest floor of any candidate. Like, you could hire Mike Miller and it could end very poorly. And it could be, oh, what a great hire by Desiree Francois, and it's literally the only hire you're going off of. Like, she doesn't have a track record to point back to and say, no, I just took a chance on that. So I think there is some skepticism as to would Desiree Francois actually hire Mike Miller to be her first hire as a basketball or football coach. I don't think it's that big of a leap to think that she would, but I do think there is some cause for concern that she might say, well, let me play it a little bit safer, because Frank Martin is safer. Even though Frank Martin is reportedly out, right? If Tim Miles gets fired, Tim Miles is safer. Like, those are safer options. If those don't work, you can say, well, as a D1 coach that had a long track record of being average, and he came here and was below average. Sorry. If you hire Mike Miller and it doesn't work, people are going to point back to it and say, what the hell were you doing giving a guy a chance who's never been a head coach before?
Oh, and see, my thoughts are, yeah, take a chance. The middling attempts have not worked out.
But Desiree Francois doesn't care about the other attempts.
Okay, well then, if she doesn't care, then just, you know, go bold. Go big.
She cares about herself and what it looks like for
okay,
her
UNLV. Okay,
but
if it works.
Right, that's what I just spent 15 minutes talking about. If
I
it
know.
Works, it'll be amazing. But if you're an athletic director making your first hire, and you hire Mike Miller and it goes poorly, it's very easy to criticize that and say, what the hell were you doing? That was a terrible decision. If you hire Frank Martin and it goes poorly, it's a lot harder to say, what the hell were you doing? Because Frank Martin has a track record of being average. And you can say, well, look at what he had done before. I thought it would be a no-brainer coming to UNLV. It's much harder to criticize that. So if you're playing it safe as an AD, Mike Miller doesn't make any sense.
I just don't think that the risk-reward of playing it safe is any contest whatsoever. Like, don't go.
I agree.
Don't play safe.
I agree.
Okay.
I'm just telling you from Desiree Francois' point of view, that might be how she views
this. Is that
this.
The vibe that you got from her?
I don't know what vibe I got from her. That was a strange press conference. That press conference on Friday was the first time that Desiree Francois has not been a walking press release.
So if you had to read some tea leaves, how do you think?
It's not Mike Miller. Based on what she said in the press conference, there's no way in hell it's Mike Miller.
Okay.
It's 100% like a Tim Miles or a Frank Martin before it's Mike Miller, based on what she said in the press conference. But I wouldn't take too much of that as what's going to happen. Because if they're doing a legitimate search and she starts interviewing these candidates and she's like, wow, Tim Miles, that guy's terrible. Never want to talk to him again. But then, you know, you talk to Mike Miller, and it's like, wow, this guy blew me away. I mean, reportedly, Desiree Francois got the job to be the AD because she was such a great interview. Like, she was, you know, she got an interview, but she wasn't really one of the top candidates, and she was so good in the interview, they hired her. They were like, we have to hire this person. So conceivably, that happens, and she's like, oh, I don't care what I said earlier. Mike Miller's awesome. Let's hire Mike Miller. Would it work? I don't know, but it'd be fun. It'd be a lot of fun. So that's what I'm cheering for. That's officially what I'm cheering for, is Mike Miller. I don't know if it'd be fun, or I don't know if it would work, but it would definitely be fun.
Is there going to be, like, can we make it some sort of thing where it's like we ask him constantly, you seem to be wearing a suit. Could you go ahead and wear something short-sleeved so he could be the basketball coach with the tattoos?
What?
No, nothing. Never mind.
Technically correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Make sure you have the Be Connected Sports app downloaded. When you sign up for a new phone account, you can get $50 to wager. It's the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
The Raiders trading Khalil Mack to the Bears was voted as best transaction at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference.
The analytics really love those first round picks. Story in The Athletic about this. Basically, they said, and by the way, this is on behalf of the Raiders side, not behalf of the Bears side. Basically, they said the Raiders, what the Raiders do with the first round picks is like a separate evaluation. But for them to get two first round picks for Khalil Mack in the transaction made it the best transaction in all of sports. And that's across the world, too, by the way. So John Gruden is a genius, right?
Was there ever any doubt?
No, I guess not. From The Athletic story, Daryl Morey called Mark Bedain, who's the Raiders president, to tell him that the Raiders won. And this was Morey's quote to The Athletic. Mark thought I was making fun of him. I had to tell him several times that I wasn't kidding. I guess they took a lot of heat for that, which is terrific. There's a trophy for it, and apparently it sits on John Gruden's desk. Of course he is taking credit for that.
What was he quoted at the beginning?
Compare that. This is a line from Vic Tafer of The Athletic back in December when they fired Reggie McKenzie. I am told that former GM Reggie McKenzie was against the trade, but one of the reasons he was fired was that Davis and Gruden feel that he didn't get enough for Khalil Mack and may have traded him to the wrong team. So when people criticize the Khalil Mack trade, they fire Reggie McKenzie and tell him that he didn't get enough in return for Khalil Mack. But when somebody praises it, John Gruden takes that trophy and sticks it on his desk and says, "You're damn right we traded Khalil Mack for two first-round picks."
I just think it's funny that the guy at the beginning of this whole thing was like, "I'm not a big analytics guy." Is now just like, best analytics right there.
This is what he's going to point to. When somebody says, "John, do you pay attention to analytics?" He's just going to pull the trophy out and say, "What are you talking about? MIT gave me an award."
Fred Hoiberg is the favorite to be the next coach at Nebraska.
Jeff Goodman is reporting that Nebraska has not fired Tim Miles yet. They are in the NIT still. But lots of people think they will fire Tim Miles. Hoiberg is one of the bigger names in the coaching market. He's from Lincoln, too, by the way, so it might just be a homecoming. I know Cofield was asking this question, but is Nebraska a better job than UNLV?
I mean,
because I kind of think it is.
Yeah.
I think Nebraska is the only Power 5 school to have never won an NCAA tournament game. Like, they have no basketball history, but they have good facilities, and they have Power 5 money. And like UNLV, it's like, yeah, maybe we can pay a coach $2.5 million. It's possible. So I think it is. Like, I think you're probably more likely to win in Nebraska. I think you're probably going to get paid more in Nebraska. It's not that much better. And it's weird to say because UNLV's won a national title and Nebraska's literally never won an NCAA tournament game, but I think it's probably better. On Hoiberg, by the way, I like him. Less than Thad Matta. He did tank out with the Bulls. But at Iowa State, like if Fred Hoiberg was the UNLV coach, as much as I complain about Marvin Menzies' offense, I would love Fred Hoiberg's offense because they shoot a ton of threes. And when he was at Iowa State, his offensive ranks in KenPom, 87 in his first year, then 24, 8, 9, 12. They shoot a lot of threes. They get to the rim. They do everything that an efficient offense should do. I would not be able to contain myself if Hoiberg was here just talking about their offense.
Vontaze Burfict is visiting the Raiders today.
That's a tweet from Tom Pelissero. He was released by the Bengals yesterday, and the connection is defensive coordinator Paul Gunther, who was the DC at Cincinnati, I think for all of Vontaze Burfict's career, and is now the DC for the Raiders. Didn't he almost kill Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
That seems smart. They should definitely. Would he kill Antonio Brown in practice?
Probably not.
You don't think so?
No, no. I think the Steelers and the Bengals have a proud tradition of hurting each other.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying that Vontaze Burfict has a bad rap because he played in that rivalry?
I'm saying every single person in that rivalry was probably not clean because, I mean, for some reason, Juju Smith-Schuster is out here delivering dirty hits. For some reason, when those two teams play each other, they're like, oh my God, that guy's dirty. Well, that guy's dirty. That guy's dirty. And then as soon as those guys get cut, those are the teams that normally call them and go, come on, we'll let you go hurt your former teammates.
Ian Rappaport tweeted that there were a couple other linebackers that visited the Raiders yesterday, Monty Te'o and Aaron Lynch. Te'o was with the Saints last year, kind of. He played in 5 games and had 18 tackles. Lynch was with the Bears. He had 16 tackles in 13 games. But either one probably starts for the Raiders.
The Raiders are interested in linebacker Brandon Marshall.
A real linebacker. Formerly of the Broncos. This was reported by Mike Kills or Kliss of 9 News in Denver. Marshall, he was a starter for the first 4 years of his time in Denver, but he wasn't last year. He did have 300 tackle seasons when he was with the Broncos. Last year, only played in 11 games, made 42 tackles. If they sign him, he's instantly the best linebacker on the roster. He's probably the best defensive player, period, on the roster if they sign Brandon Marshall. Like, I don't. Is Garyon Conley who is the best defensive player on the roster right now? Is it Garyon Conley? LaMarcus Joyner?
Joyner. No, it's probably Conley.
Like, I don't know what the answer to that question is. I'm not sure. Like,
they're not good.
It's none of the linebackers, for sure. It's none of the guys on the defensive line that are supposed to, you know, do the whole rushing the passer or stopping the run thing.
Hey, Arden Key is very good at getting to the passer.
Yes, that is true. Arden Key, not good at sacking, but good at getting there. Really
he
good.
He gets there and then falls down.
Brandon Marshall's probably immediately the best player on the defense. That's kind of sad.
The Golden Knights scored 13 goals in the last 2 games.
They are making up for all the lack of goal support they gave Malcolm Subban earlier in the year, because through the first 7 starts of the year for Subban, they scored 13 goals for Malcolm Subban. So they were less than 2 a game. Now they're giving him 6 and 7 in games. Subban actually has some margin for error. Crazy. Like, it's amazing what happens when your backup goalie plays and you score more than 1 goal. You might actually win the game. It's ridiculous. And the thing with Subban last night, he was like, okay, he gives up, 2 goals on the first 5 shots. Not ideal. One of them was very, very soft. But he was terrific last night. They had 39 shots. He saved 36 of them. That's a 9.23 save percentage. That game last night, like, everybody, like, the players afterwards were talking about how, like, they're playing well and, like, they're peaking and all this crap at the right time. They were terrible defensively last night. Like, that was last night, the Sharks had the 7th most scoring chances in any game the Golden Knights have played this year, and the 5th most total shots. Like, the Golden Knights have been good all year because they don't give up scoring chances and they don't give up shots. And last night, the Sharks had a ton. Like, Subban had to be good. Like, well, they scored 7, so it didn't have to be that good. But Subban had to be good to keep that from being an actual game late in the third period. And he was. So, like, I'm kind of hesitant on this whole, oh, they're playing well. No, they scored a lot of goals. The whole defensive thing wasn't great. So, but Subban was actually good. And it's amazing what happens when you score more than once for your backup goal. He's your backup, right? He's not supposed to be great. You got to score a little bit when he's in there.
The Golden Knights scored 3 power plays last night.
Oh, I forgot the word goals. That would have been helpful.
Yeah, I think people got it.
First time in team history that they've done that in a regular season game. So the power play hasn't been great. If you do it on goals per minute on the power play, they're 19th in the NHL in goals per minute while on the power play. So not that effective. But they're 3rd in total shot attempts per minute on the power play, 6th in scoring chances, and 9th in high danger chances. They take a lot of shots, and then they produce a good number of scoring chances and high danger chances. But they have the 6th worst shooting percentage on the power play.
Yeah, okay.
It's weird. Like, yeah. they get good looks on the power play. Like, they're pretty dangerous compared to the rest of the NHL. They don't finish anything. Just don't finish on the power play. Their biggest problem actually tends to be not so much the shots and the scoring chances. It's actually gaining the zone. One of my favorite things to do, Ryan Wallace is going to join us soon. One of my favorite things to do at home games with Ryan is count how many times the puck, there's a zone exit, so the other team gets the puck out of the zone versus shots on goal on the power play. And there are lots of power plays where the Golden Knights have like 6 zone exits and like 1 shot on goal, which is not ideal because they have times where they just can't get the puck into the zone. Now, when they get it in there, they usually look pretty good. When they actually establish zone time on the power play, they usually look pretty good because it's 5-on-4. You know, you got another extra player. But getting it into the zone tends to be really hard. I don't know why.
You ready to go to break?
I also don't know why I expected you to have some sort of input on that either. That's my bad. If you're looking for the NCAA tournament today, the first 4 starts today. It's today and tomorrow. That's on 9:20 the game. So if you're looking for those 2 16 seeds or those 2 11 seeds, I think it's today. It's today, Belmont and Temple, I think, is the first one today. You can hear those on 9:20 the game. Every NCAA tournament during the week through Friday, it's on 9:20 the game. If you're looking for it on the weekend, it'll be right here on ESPN Las Vegas. So that's your home for the NCAA tournament. Also, we got a bracket challenge on our website, lvsportsnetwork.com. It's in the rotator. Just let it scroll 1 and then click on the bracket challenge. And you get to pick your bracket. You get to challenge me and Jared. Did you keep your Final Four? Is that ridiculous Final Four you had? All right, I'm not going to spoil it. I'm gonna leave it for a minute. So, yeah, you get to fill out a bracket. We've got prizes for you. We got a men's suit valued at $700, $500 to Walker Furniture. Terrible Herbst has a gold mine full-service car wash plan for 12 months. Fuddruckers has burgers for a year, and there's more to come, apparently, from what I've been told. So, lvsportsnetwork.com. Fill out a bracket there. Beat me. Beat Jared. Hopefully you lose to Jared, actually, because Jared's bracket is ridiculous. And it'll be fun. Have you ever wondered why it is so smooth inside Bischoff's briefs? It is because of Manscaped.com. Whenever Bischoff's briefs get hairy, the Lawnmower 2.0 from Manscaped.com cleans it up. Their precision-engineered tools with skin-safe ceramic blades help avoid painful cuts inside Bischoff's briefs. So head to Manscaped.com and use code ESPN to get 20% off and free shipping. That is code ESPN at Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Tyler Bischoff is technically correct.
Is that why William Karlsson is actually a goal scorer here and in Columbus he wasn't?
No, I mean, I think William Karlsson is a goal scorer here because he plays on the top line and he's playing with top 6 forwards. And when he was in Columbus, his coach was John Tortorella, and he was playing on the 4th line for about 6 minutes a night.
So it's Tortorella. That's where the blame goes.
I mean, it's always fun to blame John Tortorella, so I'm just going to continue to do so.
Ryan Wallace is here. BGK Insider Show. Fox 98.9, 1340, pre- and post-game show, and intermission show. Don't forget the intermission. Those are very, very important. Do you pay attention to college basketball at all?
No.
Are you going to fill out a bracket, though?
I think I have to.
You have
do
to.
I have
it's
to.
It's contractually obligated to.
I have no idea what I'm going to do.
Pick a national champion.
I don't.
So the higher the number next to the team, those are the good.
I'm fairly understanding of the whole concept of the bracket. I get that.
Pick a national champion.
You got to give me some
teams. Just name a college basketball team.
Couldn't.
Name a college you think might be good at basketball.
See, there's a flag right behind you. And
they're
I was
not. That
ask,
one's
that,
not good.
Yeah, that team's not good.
I was going to ask if that's an option. Well, you know, the kid's shoe that blew up. I'm going to go with that
team. Yes, do you know what team he plays for?
It's Duke, right?
Good job. Do you know the kid's name?
Zion Williamson.
Man, Ryan is a expert.
Might have to start calling him Ryan the college basketball guy.
No.
You don't want
Let's
that?
Let's not do that.
You don't want that label?
Do you have an ad read?
I already did it.
Oh.
I've done it for you enough, right?
Yeah.
Would you? I mean, I can do it again,
I guess. I don't need you to do it. Okay. You just, we talked about which things were uncomfortable yesterday, and you said, is it more uncomfortable than being in Bischoff's briefs? Yeah. And to ask
it's a
me
fun
again.
Place to be.
It's not really.
Yeah, thanks to Manscaped.com, it is.
That's fair, I guess.
So they beat the Sharks last night, 7-3.
What a crazy game.
Well, the first period was, and then after that it just felt like the Sharks weren't very good.
Well, it was an entertaining 20 minutes, and then both teams couldn't stay out of the penalty box.
Yes,
there was no rhythm to the second
the first,
period
what,
at all.
6 minutes of the second period, somebody was on the power play?
Yeah. Like,
or 4-on-4?
5-on-5 play just wasn't...
Doesn't exist.
Wasn't anything that either team was interested in playing, and it was okay. Like, that kind of settled things down a little bit, allowed Malcolm Subban to get into his rhythm, which he usually finds in the second and third period.
So, Thinman.Vegas has a story on it this morning about how he is much better as the game goes on. Why? And like, I think it's proven because he's never given up a shootout goal either. Like, but well, if there was something beyond shootouts, Malcolm Subban would be the greatest at that ever.
I think the argument is essentially Malcolm Subban doesn't get consistent playing time. So at some point, he has to work himself back up to game speed. I understand that he practices every day. I understand that he's going through these drills in practice every single day, but it does not do any justice to what he's going to face in a game situation. It takes him a while to get settled into a game. It takes him a while to read different plays, to read off of his defensemen, to read off of what his forwards are doing, and how to best approach shots and plays. So over time, mainly the first 20 minutes, it's a feeling out process for Malcolm Subban because he plays every 2 to 3 weeks.
So should they bench Marc-Andre Fleury and just play Malcolm Subban? Because he's awesome when he plays.
Listen, all I'm going to say on this, and I'm choosing my words very carefully so that I don't get roasted on Twitter the next time Malcolm Subban lets in a soft goal from Joe Thornton. You need to figure out what's A, wrong with Marc-Andre Fleury, B, how long it's going to be, if day-to-day really does mean day-to-day and he's available as early as Thursday, or if it means day to 7 days to week to who the heck really knows. And lastly, if Marc-Andre Fleury is ready to come back and he's good, whatever he needs to be ready for the playoffs is what they need to do.
Well, if you ask Marc-Andre Fleury, it's going to be play every game.
Well, sure. and there's credence to that at this point because I'm not softening on my stance that Marc-Andre Fleury needs rest. I believe that he needs rest down the stretch, but at the same time, Marc-Andre Fleury also needs to be in a rhythm. Marc-Andre Fleury needs to have his skills ready to go. He needs to be peaking, which is what you heard the team talk about yesterday, that they're rolling and they're peaking and they're finding their form at the right time. And offensively,
the right time is a month from now.
Well,
it's not right now.
They're moving in that direction, okay? But the point is, with Marc-Andre Fleury, there's 9 games left. So there's a handful of opportunities for him to really fine-tune his game, for him to feel comfortable in his rhythm.
Are there any back-to-backs for him to play both of?
There's one more.
Oh, sweet. He's definitely playing both of those. Got to get him ready for the playoffs.
Because you would have figured he'd have factored into one of these two games.
I figured Max Legacy would have figured into one of them.
Here's a question for you. If Marc-Andre Fleury is more week to week than day to day.
Swept.
No. If he's more week to week than day to day, would you ever entertain the idea of starting Max Lagasse over Malcolm Subban?
Probably not. He's got the worst stats in the history of goaltending in the NHL.
Well, yes, but I feel like a lot of people think that had Max Lagasse played last night, the Golden Knights would have won like 7-0.
Well, of course. If anybody but Subban had played last night, it would have shut out.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. Regardless of how many shots the San Jose Sharks had.
You know, if there's
I mean, if Subban was terrible in a like back-to-back playoff, like if let's say Fleury's unavailable for the playoffs and Subban gives up 6 goals in game one. Sure. Like, okay. Like, Subban's not some infallible
goalie. I wasn't talking about the playoffs. I was just talking about 9 games left. This team's locked into third place. Would you entertain the idea of playing Max Lagasse over Malcolm Subban, even though Malcolm's only played 13 games?
Sure. Like, the amount he's played earlier in the season isn't that important. Like, if the idea is Malcolm Subban's got to be the goalie for game one of the playoffs, then, like, you're not playing him on a back-to-back late in the season. Like, you're playing him enough so that he doesn't have this whole he's got to feel the game out thing to start the playoffs. But, yeah, 9 games left, plays, like, say, in 2 of them or something like that.
I don't know that I'd do that.
You don't think so?
No.
I would just play Subban
all the way through.
You know what I don't understand is people who think the Golden Knights need a better backup goalie.
What's the job of a backup goalie?
Like, not be as good as the starter.
No, the job, the only job, literally the only job of a backup goalie is to give your team a chance to win. And it was a great stat by you. 13 goals in the first 7 starts for Malcolm Subban by the Golden Knights. Total, 13, 7 games. 13 the last 2. And lo and behold, wins. So if Malcolm Subban is giving the team a chance to win every single night, and early on in the season, I would argue that he did, especially when this team was a disaster in front of him, and they weren't putting pucks in the net at all, he's just fine as a backup goalie. And honestly, suggesting that he's fine as a backup goalie does not mean that he's going to overtake Marc-Andre Fleury and should be the starter. That is not what that means. It just means that for the job he is asked to do, which is the clear-cut backup, he's fine.
I have our headliner. Ryan Wallace says that Malcolm Subban should overtake Marc-Andre Fleury. We'll put it out there on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's fine
for you.
Yeah, that's good.
But, like, the thing is, even, like, the idea of your backup goalie, he's not going to play in the playoffs unless Marc-Andre Fleury's hurt, in which case you're screwed regardless. But, like, why would they need a backup goalie, a better backup goalie?
Well, they don't. Like,
well, You would have, what, one more win this year or something like that?
Maybe, right? Like, it's possible that if you have a guy that is capable of stealing a game or two, you have 1 or 2 more wins.
Yeah. And that's it. And then he's not going to play in the playoffs.
Pretty much.
Like the need for a better backup goalie is just so you don't get angry that he gave up 6 in a regular season game in November.
But the problem is, like, imagine that scenario. Imagine people asking or calling for a guy that is capable of stealing games. Then you just invite goalie controversy.
Yeah,
like,
Fleury's a bum.
There's a clear-cut de facto number one and a number two. Like, it's as clear as it possibly could be. And given Marc-Andre Fleury's other team and how all of that went down, why wouldn't you want to have a backup that is clearly not as good as the starter?
What if Subban is as good and they don't play him because they're afraid that they would create a goalie controversy?
I don't think that's happening here.
It is. Can you believe Mark Stone scored last night? I'm so mad.
You said that, not me.
I am so mad.
Yeah, what's the bet at? Or what's the updated stat line?
4-4. Oscar Lindberg has 4. Mark Stone has 4.
How many assists does Oscar Lindberg have?
I don't think he has any, but that's irrelevant. None. That just proves that his teammates aren't as good.
So, in fairness to your brand, it still doesn't mean that Mark Stone is better.
Yes, I know.
It's equal.
It's still good. It's so not as good, but
like
it's still good.
You're good for like another game.
Like if
like
they
you
end
continue
the season,
to do this for
if
another
they
game.
End the season with the same amount of goals, it is a victory for me.
What's that tweet gonna be? If they end the season with 10 goals each.
10? Holy hell.
Even though even though Mark Stone's gonna have like, you know, 8 to 10 more points and the Golden Knights will have won significantly more games.
Team stats.
What's that tweet gonna be?
I don't know. Something about George McPhee losing the trade, something like that.
He tied the trade.
Yeah.
He tied. Are you going to update all of that stuff next year?
Only if Oscar Lindbergh is outscoring Mark Stone. If Mark Stone scores 7 goals in the first 10 games and Lindbergh doesn't score until Christmas, no.
You know you're the reason why people don't like stats.
Am I?
Yes.
It's a compliment. Would you like a fun stat?
I'd love one.
That's going to be a promo.
So in this season with the Golden Knights, Oscar Lindbergh's Corsi is 57.7%. This season with the Golden Knights, Mark Stone's Corsi, 57.2%. Lindbergh's better than Stone. So they're tied on goals. So my next tiebreaker at the moment is Corsi.
Because it benefits you.
Yes, I will change the tiebreaker as needed.
You know, taking out the context of Mark Stone is playing against the opposition's best players every single night and still has that high of a Corsi,
right,
versus the fact that
Oscar
Lindbergh was on the third and fourth line and he's out against third and fourth line players, and it should be easier for Oscar Lindbergh to have a high Corsi.
Lindbergh played with guys like Cody Eakin and Tomasz Nosek. Stone's playing with Pacioretty.
Cody Eakin holds on to the puck a lot.
That doesn't help your Corsi.
Because if you can just get open, and Cody Eakin can stop circling the zone and find you, you're usually going to be able to get a shot on goal.
I guess it prevents other teams from shooting if you just
Cody Eakin skating around in circles in the offensive zone. No Corsi against.
Serious question for you.
Okay.
If we look at the actual playoffs this year and, like, assume Fleury's healthy.
Yep.
The difference between this year and last year, and like the reason the Golden Knights could win the Stanley Cup this year, the second line is actually really, really good.
Yeah, I completely agree there. Stone, Pacioretty, Stastny, they are incredibly good, not just offensively, but they're good defensively. They're going to be able to open up matchups for Carlson, Marchessault, and Smith. And you saw what those guys are still capable of doing. Now, it's San Jose, it's Martin Jones. Martin Jones is really, really bad. But San Jose didn't have Erik Karlsson. Assuming they have Erik Karlsson, then maybe it's a little bit different story. But those guys had a huge game. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that you've got two formidable lines. Most teams, if they're smart, are going to clue in and try to stop Stone, Stastny, and Pacioretty. And that's going to open things up for the top line.
That line is sort of it's the George McPhee actually believes in this team line, because
that's a good name. I like that.
Well, because they had an expansion team. Yeah. They were good last year, better than expectations. But going to the Stanley Cup final was probably a little bit of a mirage given the talent that they had. Like they weren't the second best team in hockey last season. George McPhee was like, all right, these guys are pretty good, but if they're actually going to win a Stanley Cup, I need to go get actual good players. And so he signed Paul Stastny, he traded for Max Pacioretty, and then he trades for Mark Stone. Like, I view that as the line of George McPhee saying, this is a real line that we're going to put out there, and that's going to help us actually win the Stanley Cup.
I don't disagree with any of that.
I said it in a very entertaining way.
It's the George McPhee line that shows you how good hockey can be when it's played at the highest level.
I do have another question, serious question for you. How much, so since Stone's been here, they're what, is it 9-1-0 now?
9-1-0, yep.
They've played Calgary, lost, San Jose, and I think the only other playoff team they've played is Dallas, correct?
Yes.
How much is the second line being awesome and the Golden Knights currently being awesome a product of, oh, Mark Stone's great, or is it just, they've played a bunch of crappy teams?
That's a slippery slope if there ever was one. I'm only here to put you on slippery slopes. I honestly think that this team is playing really, really well. I think the acquisition of Mark Stone has done a lot of things, not just in the balance of the scoring, but actually getting scoring consistently. You're getting really good performances defensively, last night notwithstanding, and Marc-Andre Fleury's found his game after having a little bit of a rough stretch. So I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that this team is clicking on all cylinders. They are playing their style of hockey more often than their opposition is forcing their brand of hockey on the Golden Knights. But you should be able to do that against teams that aren't going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, like last, like you take last night's game, and that's, you know, obviously could be a first round matchup in the playoffs. But like when they blow out Vancouver, it's like that doesn't mean anything. Like they're not going to play Vancouver in the playoffs. And I swear to God, every time I see Vancouver play, they're the worst team in the history of hockey.
I thought that was Edmonton. Anaheim. I thought that was Anaheim.
They haven't played Anaheim in a while, so my memory is a little foggy. That is a good point, though.
Was it weird to you that Connor McDavid played the point on the power play?
Why did John Merrill get benched last night?
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, John Merrill's been great. He's really been good.
I need to look it up, but I think he's still top 10 in the league in Corsi for a defenseman.
No, he's been fantastic. Now, I understand wanting to get Nick Holden some playing action because at some point... Exactly. At some point during this stretch, you're probably going to look at needing Nick Holden, probably in the playoffs. But I don't know that it should have been at the expense of sitting John Merrill.
Right. Is John Merrill going to be the best defenseman in the playoffs for the Golden Knights? Like, he's not going to draw the toughest matchups, but...
No, but he's just quietly doing all of the things right. Like, everything that he does is right. There are plays that he makes at the offensive blue line where Colin Miller would have probably shot something into somebody's pads, but John Merrill makes that extra move, that extra step, and he finds Jonathan Marchessault wide open on the side of the net for a nice deflection that almost goes in. Like, John Merrill's been fantastic.
I enjoy Colin Miller shooting from the blue line, and I can't remember who it was for the Sharks, into his legs, and then falling down trying to get the puck back, and it leads to a breakaway on Subban, in which Subban has to save him. Actually, I think the shot was completely missed on the net, but that's okay.
Sub.
Everything is Subban.
I swear to God, I'm breaking your glasses.